everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Defending the Natty podcast, our college dynasty football podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful time over the last couple of months since our last episode. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds once a month, roughly the 15th of each month. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusacanton.com, subscribe there with any of our tiers. You'll find everything you need for your CFF, Devi, C2C, and betting needs. And as of right now, you can use promo code Natty, N-A-T-T-Y, and you can get yourself a 10% discount on any of our yearly memberships, except for our C2C Winning Edge, because let's be real, that kind of stuff just can't be offered at a discount. It is too incredible. But as you guys are pretty well aware of by this point, if you listen to this podcast feed pretty often, I can be found on Twitter. I'm at @CFF_Jared. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Nate Marquise, who can be found on Twitter and Blue Sky at CFF Nate. Nate, welcome back, man.
Yeah, it's been feels like it's been a while. So it's good to get back on the CFF horse here and talk about some, some rankings as far as our way too early top five positional rankings here. So this should be a lot of fun, man. How you been?
I've been doing well. It's been a bit of a whirlwind here at the start of the CFF season. Obviously, I just put out the way too early CFF mock draft special for 2025. If y'all have not gone and checked that out already, one, you can find it on our podcast feed, but I would highly recommend you go check out the YouTube version, where there are graphics there for you to see who drafted what and stuff like that. You'll be able to see the faces of the 14 different experts that you'll be hearing from in that special. It is an absolute grand old time. Definitely go check that out. It's a great way to kick off the CFF 2025 season. Nate, did you get a chance to watch that special or look at the draft on Twitter?
I did see, so I listened to it mostly on my way into work earlier this week. And then I, obviously saw the draft board, or most of it anyways, I'm pretty sure, on that you posted on Twitter. So, it was a really interesting listen. It was really fun to hear kind of where these guys are being taken. And I'm like, whoa, dang, like I did not expect that guy to go so early, CJ Donaldson. there's obviously a handful of players who are like, oh man, that seems like incredible value. I would have taken that guy way earlier. So it was really good. And the guys that you had on there, the guys that participate in that, the Froton, Lob, All those guys, man. It's good to hear from them, because it's been a few months since we've got to listen in from a number of those podcasts that I'm so used to listening to weekly throughout the fall.
I think a lot of us were definitely enjoying the mini vacation a lot of us took during the month of December before I dragged everybody back out of retirement for that special. Trying to think of anything else. The main takeaway from like that special that I kind of got is really just how wide open this year feels with pretty much every position except for the quarterback. Like running backs and wide receivers, we lost so much from last year. Quarterbacks, we bring back a ton, but we also don't bring back a ton of the elite options, right? So it's a very interesting game of like, how are you going to handle drafts this year, right? Because a lot of us seem to kind of center in on, taking running back early because there's some pretty good guys that are available and a lot of question marks later. But in my opinion, you can almost buck the trend a little bit and just draft another position early on and play into the risk of running back, right? Because there's a ton of guys that could be heavily valued later on, but we just don't know like what that position looks like right now. Like, is that kind of your takeaway from it? And this kind of plays into Dynasty as well. We'll get into that in a bit here.
You mentioned like with quarterback, there's a lot of players back, but you said there's not a lot of the elite guys. Like there's not a clear, one, two, three as far what quarterback rankings are. But I will say like the elite guys are back. Like John Mateer is back. Devin Dampier is back. They're just so much has changed with their current status that it's hard to say, oh, okay. I mean, obviously if John Mateer and Ben Arbuckle stayed you're just going to make them make him the 101, as far as with quarterbacks and that type of thing. So yeah, I mean, I think the main takeaway I got listening to it is everybody was like, oh man, I really wish I would have gotten this running back earlier. Like it was a lot of boy, there's a pretty big cliff with running back, and you kind of want some of those elite guys. And same thing with wide receiver too, I guess. It's just Boy, it's there has been a lot. It does seem like it is more wide open. Like there has been more turnover at the top with CFF this year, and maybe that's just everything changing, you know, with NIL and transfers.
I think it's a couple of things, right? Like one, the NIL and transfers and everything obviously throw a wrench in terms of how many players are changing their situations every single year. But also we have to remember we're coming out of the COVID era, right? We're quickly getting back to where guys only have four, I guess maybe five, depending on what the NCAA does with their eligibility rules over the next couple of years. But we're not having any more of these 6 year, 7 year guys that somehow manage to stay in college forever, right? Like, we're going back to the turnover rate we used to have. So I think that's something that people are kind of getting used to again is, like, shoot, running backs, again, I saw somebody lay out all the running backs that are in this year's NFL draft, and I'm just sitting there like, holy crap, like, I didn't even realize until now, like, just how much we lost from last year.
Last year was an incredible year for, like, just knowing, like, okay, this, like, Amarian Hampton, like, stud, like, you know it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, there were just so many running backs that you could count on last year that are, they're gone, man. They're just gone.
All righty. Well, Nate, what are we talking about here today, man? It's February. Like CFF Dynasty, like I barely put together my redraft rankings. I've let alone like really dived into my Dynasty rankings here today. But I think this is a great point for us to try to get people into what's the word I'm looking for? Just kind of dip their toes in, right? We're going to discuss our top
surface.
Five at each.
Touching
on the surface, just giving everybody a starting point for Dynasty this year. Like, where are our heads at? Like we said, a lot of things changing with college football, with the transfer portal, more turnover than the last couple of years, right? So we're going to discuss our top five at each position for our Dynasty rankings. These are not official in any way. You're not going to see these on campusacanton.com or anything just yet, but we just kind of took a 1,000-foot view and kind of came up with a list of top five guys at each position. And I'll be real, I listed one to two more at running back and wide receiver because I'm just sitting here wondering, like, I felt wrong for leaving some guys off. So I guess we'll discuss those guys as well. But Nate, before we get into that, I want to give you a quick pat on the back, Nate, because really goes to show your props as a CFF Dynasty player, because What do we want more than anything else about some of the guys that you got a smile on your face wondering where the heck I'm going with this.
I am wondering.
But like, what do we want? Like, when we take a freshman, what do we want to see that freshman become later on, right? An elite player on redraft drafts, right?
Sure, yeah.
And some of the guys that you hyped up from the very beginning that other people weren't going after, they're now elite options. Damon Claiborne, Damon Williams, Denzel Boston, Kadem Durham, like, congrats, man. Like, you are, like, just really goes to show just how well you are at picking out some of these guys.
Well, I appreciate that. I can't take credit for Kadem Durham. That's for sure. Josh Chevalier certainly can. But, yeah, obviously, some of those other guys you listed, I was trying to push for them early on before they kind of broke out. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the main reason we play Dynasty, right?
Oh,
is
yeah.
to take take our flag and plant it on a handful of guys, and most of the time it doesn't pan out, but sometimes it does. And when it does, it's like, all right, now we're cooking, because I got this guy to roll with me for the next couple of years. You know, it feels really good when you have that sustainability with your roster when it comes to Dynasty.
I got my fingers crossed for the likes of Yassine Willis and Antoine Raymond. Those are my two that I'm hoping really, really break
yeah.
out this year.
But, I think there's strong potential there, both of them.
So, all right, enough of the patting of the back, Nate. We got our top five players to each position. I'm going to go over a couple of things that matter to me when picking a top five, just kind of help me clear out everything. And a lot of this is the same as last year when we discussed the rankings, but there are a few things that changed a little bit, especially with the evolving landscape. So one, I think it's pretty clear. I think to make the top five, you have to have more than 1 year of eligibility left, which is, you know, pretty hard to come by at this point, actually, because again, like I said, there's less eligibility to go around. But that is something that slightly changed from last year, because I don't know if you remember, Nate, but my running back dynasty rankings last year, I had a crap ton of running backs like in my top 10 that were only 1 year of eligibility, because it was just such an elite class last year, right? Even of guys that I knew only had 1 year left, like, I wasn't going to pass up on that 1 year. And this goes back to what we were talking about, where there's very few known commodities at running back this year. So to me, that means I kind of have to play into the multiple years of eligibility left because there's no surefire guy that I'm going to get for 1 year. Two, I'm mostly stuck to Power Four schools. I'm looking for guys that are most likely going to actually stay at the spot that they're going to be at. So that does push up guys like at programs like Alabama, Ohio State, things like that, where I don't really see them moving on to a different location unless something absolutely crazy happens, because that's another level of stability that I have seen. Last point, you're not going to find anybody on my list that just hasn't done anything so far this year. Or so far in their career, right? Like, even if it's just a couple of games, like, I've seen something where I'm like, okay, I can tell that this guy is going to be good once he starts full time. But, you know, I'm not going to put in here a true freshman or anything like that. Like, at least not at this point. There's nobody out there that I would really say is a clear, surefire guy to put in the top five. Do you mostly agree with those points, Nate, or do you have anything else that you kind of look for?
I do mostly agree with those points, except for maybe the last guy that we talk about may not fit the criteria that you've listed. But
okay,
for 9 times out of 10, yeah, that's I think all of those are good rules to follow. And again, when you're talking about top five guys, right? We're just touching on the surface. We're not digging into, okay, this is my RB25 in Dynasty. Top five guys, these guys should be guys that have proven mm-hmm. something. You know, I mean, they, like, you want that level of, you know, has shown it to you before you, at least to a certain degree, before you just, you know, take, you know, a freshman that you haven't even seen play at this level yet.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No more Dante Moores in the first round of startups, Nate. Sorry.
I had to go there, right?
I had to sneak one little.
Hey, I'll tell you what, Dante Moore's in a really good spot this year. Hey,
you're right.
Right now, would you rather have Dante Moore or Nico Emelieva?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, Oregon playing in the Big Ten does kind of neuter them just slightly compared to like where they were in the Pac-12, but I'd still say I can pull up my rankings right now. I can tell you exactly where. I have Nico...
Dante Moore or Malachi Nelson?
Oh, 100% Dante Moore.
Yeah, it was a bad pick. Don't get me wrong, but it's looking okay.
You're getting something for what was supposed to be like an elite class of quarterbacks. Like, boy, it fell apart pretty. Yeah,
Moore or Jackson Arnold.
I have Dante Moore ahead of Jackson Arnold. Yeah. So I'll tell you in my redraft rankings. I have Moore at 41, Arnold at 47, Nico at 50. Which is okay. Crazy compared to what I would have expected out of them last year.
And that is Dante Moore is the tallest midget out of that group. That is for sure.
I poke fun at you for that Dante Moore pick, Nate, but let it be known you went and won that league 2 years in a row. So like I can't. That's the only thing I can make fun of you for in that league.
I'm not good at making first round draft picks in deep dynasty leagues, except for somebody we will definitely talk about today.
For sure. Nate, one other thing we got to do. Do you want to do the trade talk at the end? I forgot to do this at the top of the show.
Oh, but. Yeah. Yeah, let's save it to the end. Let's jump in this just in case people are like, I don't want to listen to their trade.
Yeah.
Crap.
Nate and I are going to maybe make a trade at the end of the year, and that's going to make Chris K cry. Let's go for quarterbacks, Nate. Do you want to name your number one guy, or you want me to name my number one guy?
You go first.
I'm going to go Damon Williams, quarterback out of Washington.
I'm going to go Damon Williams.
Okay. So like this is like a risky one, right? Because we've only seen really two full games of him starting. Both great games, don't get me wrong. Like 20, I think it was like 28 fantasy points and 4-point passing touchdown per game. Like been fantastic so far, but we haven't really seen what he looks like, you know, week to week in a, you know, Big Ten schedule or anything like that. But all the pieces are there, right? Great system. We love Jed Fish's system. Dual threat guy. This is a dude that absolutely has 500 yards rushing and 10 touchdown upside both years that he is playing. I think that this is actually one of those guys that I don't think I'm too concerned about him transferring because mm-hmm. he strikes me as the kind of guy that if he leaves Washington, he's going to be looking for an opportunity to go to an elite school like Ohio State, Alabama, Oregon. Offensive systems that we like for the most part, right?
Yeah.
So I feel pretty safe about keeping him at number one for right now, especially in a year where as I mentioned, there's a lot of great quarterbacks out there. But because there's so many great quarterbacks, again, these guys who are very young and have multiple years of eligibility left, I think it makes Damon Williams easily one of the best ones. Although, again, I'm sad to say that I think he's talented enough that I don't think we get all 4 years of eligibility out of him. I think he leaves. I think he's a three and done.
I'll kind of disagree with you on that because, I mean, shoot, Kyler Murray's in the league. So if he can make it, pretty much anybody under the height of like 5'10" can. But I mean, Damon Williams is a little guy. I mean, he's like 5'10", you know, 180 or something like that. Like he's a tiny guy. So
fair point.
Not exactly what the NFL generally looks for, but you know, it's evolving. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Like he's my number one. I think the thing that excites me the most is that we saw glimpses of what he's capable of in those last couple of games of the season last year while allowing 15 sacks like in two games. It was insane. And everything I've read, just a short little bit reading the tea leaves at Washington this year, they are light years ahead on the offensive line today versus where they were heading into last year.
God bless.
So, right. So I think if that offensive line can be even average, like not good, just be average. And I think the sky's the limit because, yeah, his wheels are legit. And, you know, he's got some decent options, you know, a decent wide receiver room to work with there. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, I mean, I think the only real knock here is that you don't love putting a Big Ten quarterback as your QB1 overall. But I'm with you on the transfer thing. He's already transferred once and it was to follow Jed Fish. So I think if he transfers again, it's likely if Jed Fish takes a job somewhere else, which is fine because we like that pairing. Jed Fish has proven to be pretty good for QB so far.
All right, Nate, who do you got as your QB2?
So this was actually somebody that I considered over Damon Williams, but I decided against it just because my love for Damon knows no bounds. But my number two is ODU quarterback Colton Joseph.
Oh.
So he obviously has a lot of eligibility left as well. So I like that. And he's similar to Damon Williams as far as, you know, the ability to run, can make enough plays with his arm, except for he doesn't play in the Big Ten. And, you know, I think it's a good system. That OC that they've got there at ODU is a guy that has studied the, you know, the veer and shoot, Briles system. So it's always, or at least generally, is pretty good for quarterbacks. So I would feel really strong if Colton Joseph were on my roster in a dynasty league. So he's my number two.
So Colton Joseph is my first man on the outside of my top five. Okay. And my big thing here is that point I brought back to the beginning of the conversation, right, where I'm mostly trying to stick to Power Four schools here for the most part.
Just for the chance that he transfers up somewhere?
Yeah. And he Damon Williams strikes me as, he strikes me as a guy that if he's leaving for a better opportunity, either following Jed Fish or he is going, like, somebody, you know, like Miami or Ohio State has enticed him with a really big NIL offer, and we should appreciate that. Colton Joseph, you know, being a G5 quarterback, he could be John Mateer going to Oklahoma. We feel pretty good about that. Or he could be, you know,
Vanderbilt.
He could be going to Vanderbilt, which, again, I mean, Diego Pavia has been great there as well. But, like, Colton Joseph could end up in a variety of places, right? Like, I think that there's a lot more to worry about there. I will say, though, he did not transfer this past year. And I don't think that it was unlikely that he wasn't getting NIL offers from some of these Power Four schools and everything, because he performed really well down the stretch.
That's what I was about to ask you. Like, what would it take for him to transfer? I think it would take a monster year, right? Like to get enough eyes on him to where the NIL is lucrative enough to pull him into the portal.
Yeah.
And if that's what it takes, then I'm okay with that, because that just means I just got a monster year out of him, and hopefully he lands somewhere decent and it's okay from there. But yeah.
Oh yeah, I love Colton for this year 100%. I think I have him rated as my QB 3 in redraft. Yes, I got him as my QB 3. And I just got him in the fourth round of a best ball draft and everything. I love the value where he's going at right now. Typically, I kind of wait at quarterback so far this year, but I couldn't pass up that value. My number two guy here, and we'll see if this guy's in your top five, but I just mentioned him. I'm sticking with John Mateer. There's a lot of risk going to Oklahoma. Obviously, those offensive line issues are a major, major question mark for Oklahoma's entire offense, but I can't deny that John Mateer following Ben Arbuckle is something that I still love to see. And even though there is offensive line issues, right, Mateer's skill set plays into that, right? He is a scrambling quarterback. He is not afraid to take off and run if he feels like he's getting under pressure. Now, we'll see if that works against the likes of, you know, SEC linebackers and defensive ends. Who knows? But for right now, he's in the system that has made him profitable so far. Arbuckle's going to let him run. You got a guy with multiple years of eligibility here. I don't think Mateer is talented enough to really go to the NFL after this year, right? So I think I'm getting 2 years of him in the SEC here. I am pretty okay with having Mateer this high in Dynasty. What about you, Nate? Is he in your top five?
He is in my top five. He is number four for me. So, yeah, I mean, John Mateer transferring to Oklahoma without Ben Arbuckle, probably not something that would excite you very much, right? Especially just based off what I had to watch very closely all of last year with Jackson Arnold and I mean, Mike Hawkins came in and got benched again for Jackson Arnold. Yeah, you know, that whole thing was ugly. And Mateer is somebody that probably by the time people listen to this will maybe have already seen my QB stock report. And that's just for redraft, but like John Mateer is on my stock down list. Not because I think he's garbage now. No, I still think he's a top 10 QB for redraft and a top 5 QB for dynasty. But, you know, the situations have changed, just like we talked about at the start of the show. But nonetheless, give me a Ben Arbuckle quarterback that's a dual threat guy. I'm in. I'm kind of in on that. I like it.
And like obviously there's going to be concerns about him going up from the Pac-12 to the SEC, but like even if you take his production last year, which again, I wrapping my mind around his production last year still blows my mind sometimes.
He was pretty good, right?
Like even if you reduce his production by 25%, Nate, you're still looking at a top 11 quarterback in last year. Yeah. Like, now, that's not how it always works. Again, obviously, the offensive line issues at Oklahoma could completely tank a season. Pray to God that, you know, Brent Venables and staff over there are taking care of that. You know, I feel like that should be their number one issue. But right. I don't know, Nate, you can maybe expound on that, maybe assuage some people's fears on that. But I think that
it's maybe it's not. I mean, it's
you're not
helping
my
great.
Case here, Nate.
I will be surprised if the O-line all of a sudden is just like good.
We're going to stop the recording. We're going to go back and now try again. No. Again, there's very legitimate concerns here, but again, I'm willing to take the risk. I love Mateer. I love his play. Like it's everything you want in a CFF quarterback.
Yeah, it's the same. It was the same feeling I had about Jalen Milroe last year in the sense that there's 2 years of eligibility left. There's only a couple ways this plays out. Either he's really, really good and it does turn enough heads to where he goes pro, like Jalen Milroe decided to do this year, or, you know, he's okay. And Oklahoma's got enough money in the treasure chest to find a way to keep him for another year. And you get two pretty good years out of him.
Or like that's option three, Brent Venables gets fired. Arbuckle goes somewhere else and then Mateer follows him there.
Yep. Exactly.
And you know what? What if they went to Miami?
Okay. Then we're probably still. I mean, that's John Mateer was between OU and Miami anyways.
You're right. So. All right. We'll go with your number three guy here because I just went with my number two.
Yeah. I will go Avery Johnson for Kansas State. Similar to what you just said about John Mateer. I think that there's not a really definite path to the NFL for Avery Johnson. I think if you own him, you will get 2 years out of him. I don't know that both those years will be at Kansas State, but I do think that it's a good fit right now. They just hired Matt Wells to be the new offensive coordinator because they lost their OC to the NFL. I don't hate that at all. Like, I actually would prefer Matt Wells be the play caller just based off his track record with quarterbacks than the guy that was there before him. So I still am very high on Avery Johnson. It was pretty close, just like it was close between Damon Williams and Colton Joseph for me. You could kind of flip-flop AJ and John Mateer here. I could go either way. But I just like Avery Johnson a little bit more. I think that offense is kind of centered around him now, like where it's his thing. He's got a year under his belt now as the full-time guy. Now it's like, okay, let's go. Let's just kind of take the training wheels off and let it ride.
And I got Avery Johnson as my QB5 for Dynasty, so I'm fully with you here. The thing that really stuck out to me about Avery Johnson was, like, last year for a good chunk of the season, a lot of people kind of considered him a disappointment, right? They were like thinking, like, oh, we're gonna get Will Howard numbers out of him, and like at least it didn't start off that way. But I think a lot of people will be surprised to learn that he finished the year QB 18 on the year,
Yeah,
right? Like
his second half was good. His second half was good.
his second half was good, and also I think a lot of people like would realize, like, even in a down year, right? Like, he again still finished the top 20. Like, if he gets better this year, like, I think it's pretty clear that he'll probably finish within the top 12. I think I have him rated, let's see, I got him at QB 11 right now. I could probably see myself moving up a little bit ahead of maybe some more unproven guys like, Jaden Maiava and stuff like that. But like, what was also nice about Avery Johnson was that last year he was very consistent in conference games. Like, a lot of times you'll see guys do really, really well outside of conference and then kind of slack off once they get into conference play. But he's QB 23 in conference play last year, so I think, shockingly enough, like, Avery Johnson, for as slow of a start as he had last year, I think he might be the safest guy potentially among all the quarterbacks we talk about here today.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. So last year he only returned one offensive lineman. This year they're going to return more, so I think that's good.
That'll help.
And like I said, I think the OC situation is better. The only bummer this year about him is that Kansas State, they play that Farmageddon game against Iowa State in week zero in Ireland. Make that make sense? I don't get it. Why play your one of your biggest rival games all the way in Ireland, especially when it's called Farmageddon? I think they're called, I forget what they're calling this one, but it's still something again, but it's got like an Irish overtone to it. But
I'm doing some research now that I gotta find out what this
I
is.
forget what they're calling it. It made me laugh when I heard it, but so that's a bummer. You're gonna get 3 bye weeks out of Avery Johnson. But outside of that, I mean, I still think that it's, I think, I probably have more trust in Avery Johnson than most people. And, it probably makes more sense to have him at five like you do. But like you said, I think from a floor standpoint, he probably has the highest floor of anybody that we've talked about so far.
And I think we would both agree that among all the quarterbacks we talked about today so far, maybe outside of Colton Joseph, right? I think Avery Johnson's easily, like you mentioned at the top of when talking about him, like, I don't see him going to the NFL. Like, you're going to get 2 years of eligibility out of him over the next couple of years.
I think so.
My number three, this is where I think you and I will differ a little bit, because I know that you're a little hesitant on this guy, but I got Lenore Sellers. I can't ignore that second half of the season where things kind of started to get figured out with South Carolina. Finishes QB3 in the second half of last year, right? We talked about how there's not really a ton of elite options coming back for quarterback this year. If you look at just the second half, Lenore Sellers does fit that bill, and that's why he's going pretty high in drafts so far and are way too early. He was taken in the first round in the best ball draft that I'm in right now. Let me see if I can pull that up real quick. I think he was taken, yeah, right at the end of the first round as well. Like, people are, because of that second half, people are treating him like a elite option coming back from last year, and I don't necessarily blame them, right? We saw that South Carolina's offense was able to, produce in the SEC as well. His skill set is everything we really want in a CFF quarterback, right? With his dual threat ability, he can take over a game with his legs. My only concern is, one, the NFL draft buzz around him is obviously kicking up, so he could be gone after this year. Right. But if not, very similar to Damon Williams, I think that if he stays another year, one, either he stays in South Carolina, we're good to go there, or two, somebody's going to throw a bag at him. Right. So, Nate, your thoughts on Sellers?
So if I had, I just think Sellers is gone after this year. Like I think there's going to be enough hype. If he plays like a top 10 quarterback,
He'll be gone.
I think the NFL will be interested enough in him that that he will leave. Yes, there's always a Miami or an Oregon or a Texas, you know, that could be, you know, like just kind of waiting in the weeds and says, you know, sure, you can go to the NFL, you can be a third round draft pick, or you can come here for $8 million. Who knows what we're talking about a year from now? Come here for $8 million for one season and then go to the NFL. So, I think that's the only reason he wasn't listed on my list is if you told me he's here for 2 years, sure, I'm all in. Like he's definitely a top three guy for me as well, but I just don't think that's what's happening.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Again, I probably broke my rules a little bit on that one because, again, like you're right, the path to him staying 2 years is pretty narrow.
Who's the new OC at South Carolina?
That
Did
is
they
a
just like
great
promote from
question.
within, like an analyst that has been around? I think it's an analyst that's been around the block before.
Shula.
Oh, that's right. That's right. See, like that also is a little bit of concern. Like I'm just like, what am I supposed to do with that?
I
But at the
mean, but
same time,
like we didn't
I didn't have
like,
any confidence in his OC last year, and he was just fine. So some guys are good enough to break the mold, you know?
yeah. Again, he's got the skill set to where he can kind of just take over a game on his own. He doesn't need the play calling to be great to be good.
Yeah.
Nate, I think again we've hit your 1, 2, 3, and 4. I think your number 5's the only one left, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. But you haven't said your four. Who's your four? You
My
can go ahead
four
and go.
is Devin Dampier. I'm sticking with
Oh,
it.
okay.
Again, very similar to Mateer, following his OC, even though he's going to Utah, right? Again, me and Chris Moxley discussed this at length during the Transfer Portal CTN show, where, there's reason to be concerned, right? Utah's got a much better defense. They're not going to be in shootouts like New Mexico was last year. Like, even if you take that into account, right, there's so many things going for Dampier here in Utah that I think still warrant him being a top. Shoot, what do I have him in? Redraft. I should have memorized these things. I have a QB7 in redraft, so I'm still viewing him as a high asset this year. I don't think he's an NFL prospect, so I think you'll get your 2 years of eligibility. Shoot, even 3 years, because I don't think he burned his redshirt his first year,
That's
right?
correct. Yeah, he was a freshman, redshirt freshman last year.
So you got a guy here playing in the Big 12, which is a conference known for shootouts, right? Again, we're kind of getting back to that classic Big 12 right now. Even Utah was giving up points last year. You got a guy here that is pretty much, I'd say, locked in for 500 yards every single year, especially
Yeah.
with him following the offensive, like following his offensive coordinator that knows how to use his running game and everything. I don't think you can really ask for a safer play in Dynasty. A guy that has potentially 3 years playing here, 500 rushing yards every single year. Again, is the jump up in competition somewhat of concern? Yes, but I trust it even more than like Mateer to Oklahoma. So I think, yeah, I'm pretty comfortable with Devin Dampier here as my QB4 in Dynasty.
I was, while you're talking about him, I was looking at his Sports Reference stats, and it was weird because they have him as 2023. They have him listed as a freshman. None of this makes any sense. It says he played 9 games as a freshman in 2023.
Here,
That's not
I'll look up
true.
PFF. They're usually pretty good about.
Okay. Yeah. But the reason why I was looking this up is because I was absolutely, I guess, really surprised to see how bad of a passer he is. Like, have you looked at his passing stats from last year? Like, I know he is an incredible runner. Like, I
Oh,
think he
yeah.
had close to 1,200 yards and like 15 to 20 touchdowns. Like, he was off the charts running the ball. He had 12 passing touchdowns to 12 interceptions, I believe, is what he said. I don't believe any of this from Sports Reference, now that I've seen what they showed his
By the way,
freshman numbers. Is that
they're
right? Was he
correct.
12 to 12? Okay. What do you mean they're correct? Are you on
He
his eligibility?
played 9 games as a
He
freshman.
played. Oh, so he will be a true junior then, I guess, for
Yes.
the. Okay, so we know for sure he has 2 years of eligibility left, not three. So that's good to know. I'm glad that we figured that
Corrected
out
that on
here.
air.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, just the concern for me is, like a lot of people have concerns about John Mathier. Will it translate to the SEC? And I get Devin Dampier is not going to the SEC, and he is also similar to John Mathier following his offensive coordinator. But man, if you're throwing 12 touchdowns, 12 interceptions in the Mountain West, like that part's a little concerning to me. You know, I mean, he's,
Agreed.
you know,
Seven.
sub 58% passer. Like some of the passing stuff is a little sketch. But at the end of the day, like I probably should have him. He's a much safer play than my number five that we're going to talk about here in just a minute. So I don't hate this call at all. I think it's a good call. He should be fine at Utah. He may not be. He's not running for 1,200 yards and 19 touchdowns, but
No.
he should be fine there, pushing 800 yards and 10 touchdowns on the ground, I would think.
Yeah, I would say if you can get 507 touchdowns out of him on the ground and everything, you don't really need him to do that much in the passing in order to. I mean, again, shoot, he was sub 3,000 last year in passing and, QB2 on the year. So, who is your QB5? You teased me there a little bit with him being a very, very volatile pick here. So,
The
oh no,
mystery man,
actually,
yeah.
no, mystery man, because this is you. I put out my redraft rankings in our C2C Slack, and you teased me by saying, "Oh, Jared's going to be very disagreeing with one of my QB picks for Dynasty based on where he has him in this ranking right now." So let's see where we got.
This is the one because I'm pretty sure you have him somewhere in like your 50s or 60s for redraft this year. And that is Hawaii freshman Micah Aliado. He is my number five dynasty quarterback, a redshirt freshman. He did not play in enough games to qualify. I'm pretty sure, about 99% sure on that one. But I did. I stayed up and watched quite a bit of that game. He started, I think it was against Devin Dampier for New Mexico. The last game of the season there for Hawaii. And, I think he threw for about 450 and five touchdowns or so, ran for another 50. He's like 5'7", and he's a lefty. So everything I was watching was like, what is this junior high left-handed guy doing out here carving up New Mexico? But it was kind of fun to watch. None of it made any sense, but it was what Hawaii wants to run with the run and shoot. It was a guy that you could tell felt very comfortable in that and did a lot of things from an accuracy and from a quick decision-making standpoint that Shager just was incapable of doing. So they return a lot of wide receivers there too. Cynical, I know, returned from the portal. One of their other guys also entered the portal and came back. And then obviously they got Ashlock there as well. So I think it's a solid wide receiver room. Again, he could transfer up, like you said. It's hard to really put a lot of faith in these G5 guys. Look at Fluff Bothwell. Look at what's his name that was at that ended up at Missouri, the other running back.
Ahmad Hardy.
Maude Hardy, thank you. So there could always be that situation here, but I like what I saw from Hawaii with when he was a starter there.
Okay, so I made a correction in my redraft rankings because you're right, I did have him way too low. I think he, like when I was just putting it together, he just kind of kept going down. I just didn't realize he got caught. I moved him up to my QB 32, which probably still isn't high enough for a lot of people, right? Given where he's going in drafts right now, like I think a lot of people would say I
We've
still have
seen
him
one
too.
game. One game. That's
We've
all
seen one game and it was an incredible game. Do not get me wrong. My problem is that, again, I'm still kind of concerned that we're never really going to get it with Timmy Chang. at Hawaii,
Yeah,
right? Like, now, great.
that's a fair point.
Like, he really stuck it with Braden Shager for way too long. Like, if this is really, like, if Alejandro comes out and just dominates this year, I'm going to still have a lot of questions about why Timmy Chang did not switch to him earlier, because Shager was bad last year. Like, it was like, dude, move on. Like, this isn't it. Like, the guy, Shager tried to transfer last year, and then they welcomed him back with open arms as if he was, like, this great savior of the program. And I'm like, this dude hasn't done crap for this program.
Yeah, like, let Shager walk. How could you not recruit an older quarterback to Hawaii? Like from the portal. Like, come play in Hawaii for a year. You get to live on the island and hang out on the beach for a year. Surely they could have got somebody better than Braden Shager.
And so, like, that makes me wonder just about the system in general, right? Like, again, they're clearly trying. Like, again, based on, like, the volume numbers of passing, everything, they're clearly trying. And I'm hoping that Alejandro does move, like, bring this system up with him. To your point about Alejandro's size, again, a 5'7 quarterback's not going to translate to a power forward.
He's not 5'7, but it sure looked like he was. He looked like...
Oh, 5'10, excuse me.
Yeah, 5'10 is very generous for what... what it looked like whenever I watched him play.
It was
hilarious.
To your point, right? Like, unless he goes absolutely bonkers this year, right? Like, most schools are going to look at those measurables and be like, I don't know if we really want to do that in a power forward conference. So maybe he sticks with Hawaii. And a lot of these Hawaii guys are very loyal. And we'll kind of talk about that later with, you know, a receiver, right? Where they've had their opportunities to transfer and they just haven't so far.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, again, when you have the opportunity to go live on Hawaii for 4 years, like, are you really looking for reasons to leave if you don't think you don't have options elsewhere? I totally get having Alejandro in top five. A lot of people are high on him this year. Again, I'm not quite ready to put him in my elite tier of quarterbacks because there's just so many great quarterbacks that are coming back from last year.
Yeah.
That
Hawaii is another one too that has three byes. So just from a redraft standpoint, I do think you have to take that into consideration. Besides Colton Joseph, were there any other guys that you had like just right on the fringe or that you were like, I don't know what to do with this guy type deal?
Colton Joseph was really kind of my only one there. Caden Veltkamp could really work out at Florida Atlantic. I think he's got 2 years of eligibility left still, or might have that wrong off the top of my head.
I think you're right.
I considered Arch Manning at first, but again, like, he's gone after this year, right? Like, there's no way he doesn't go to the NFL. Yeah. I have to check what Bryson Barnes' eligibility is. I doubt he has more than just this year left. He might be somebody that I consider. Keaton Hauser out of East Carolina is an interesting one.
Did you not consider DJ Legway at all?
No.
Really?
No.
Oh, he was one I considered right there next to.
Based on what I have seen so far with him and Billy Napier, it is just not it right now. He averaged 13 points per game in conference play last year. Like, he could take a big step up this year. He can increase 50% and he'd be a 20-point per game quarterback. That could get you decent places, but it's not going to be somebody I'm looking at getting in top five of Dynasty.
I think the only thing that kind of impacted how that played out was that hamstring was never right throughout the entire year. And mm-hmm. this is a guy, like, I think some of the athleticism numbers in me, you, and Chevalier talked about this, you know, around this time last year. Some of the athleticism numbers were a little skewed, but I just think this is a guy that when healthy, he's not being, you know, ripping up, treading his hamstring. I think those numbers are higher because they're going to need him to be more involved in the run game in order for that offense to be humming at the level they need it to. So I think the ceiling is much higher than just looking at him and say, oh, well, look at this guy. He's just a 13. He didn't run at all last year. Come on, DJ Lagway didn't run at all. That didn't make sense.
I mean, fair enough. But as you probably know better than I do, Nate, right? Hammies are fickle, right? If it is a hamstring issue, right? Like, that doesn't necessarily always go away. It can come back pretty easily. So
Byron Brown was another guy that I had a difficult time because he's got two years left, you know, like
I keep forgetting that. Yeah,
what do we do with him? Like, he's kind of a one for me.
I have
maybe I rank him, maybe I don't.
I got him ranked as QB 39 in redraft right now, and like, that's another one where I, like, I could see myself moving up if there's good camp reports and everything. I'm shocked he didn't transfer. Like that felt like it was like written in stone that he was going to transfer out after this year, and apparently not. Apparently they convinced him to come back. So hopefully that means they got a lot of good things in store for him. But yeah, I'd say probably Byron Brown still probably crack my top 10. I don't know. Again, I just don't think he'll get into my top five until we figure out what they're doing there.
Yeah.
Running backs, Nate. I think we're both in agreement on the number one running back for Dynasty. We both made it our hot take last time we discussed him. So I guess 1, 2, 3, Isaac Brown.
Yes, it is.
Yep. I mean, there's a lot here, right? Obviously, Jeff Brom's number one running backs. We've seen it the last couple of years, right? Where, I mean, shoot, Isaac Brown, just the past year as a true freshman, top 35 running back for CFF. I believe he was top 25 for his second half of the season once things kind of got going there, right? He is a true dual threat running back where, you know, you can get him on the ground. You get a ton of receiving work out of him. Probably the biggest concern is the fact that Duke Watson's also a pretty good back in his own right. And so that'll probably siphon some things away from Isaac Brown. But in a year, in a landscape of college football where there's just not a lot of known commodities at running back, I'm totally okay with taking some risks on guys like Isaac Brown that I've just seen do it already. Especially as a true freshman, I feel like he only gets better from here. So additional thoughts, Nate?
No, I think you kind of hit on the only concern. The only concern really is Duke Watson. I mean, Isaac Brown he got knocked out of one game early last year, but for the most part, he was pretty durable. So, I think it's kind of wheels up. We like the system. Yeah, it's just one of those safe floor, high ceiling guys. You know, this is kind of what you want with multiple years of eligibility left at a program that I think has some money, like, you know, but I mean, either way, I think he's good enough to where he would be fine even if he landed somewhere else that could lure him into the portal. So I think it's a solid number one.
Let me throw a scenario out here that just popped into my head. There's no backing on this whatsoever, but Texas running back Isaac Brown.
Sure, sign me up. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Make it happen.
Like that to me just feels like something that could very well happen in the future. And I did just look it up again. Yeah. RB30 on the year, RB18 week 7 on. So again, clearly a very safe value there.
He was one of those guys, and there's another one on this list where I'm just like, when the coach says, okay, let's just let the freshman eat, then they went ahead and ate just fine. And it's like, now this is what you should have been doing actually since week 1. And it's, you know, sometimes freshmen just kind of work their way in there. But same thing we saw with Darius Taylor last year, right? I mean, he hardly got any carries through the first 4 weeks. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, we're going to let him eat. And oh, well, should have been doing that the whole time.
I mean, speaking of Darius Taylor, I got him as my RB2 for Dynasty. Okay. Based on PJ Fleck's track record, we don't really see a ton of his guys go off to the NFL, right? Again, I think because of the workload they get, Darius Taylor is probably the best out of the bunch that he's gotten over the last couple of years, but Taylor seems to pretty fiercely loyal to Minnesota, right? Like, I think he basically helps run their NIL program, getting guys on the team, like deals and stuff like that. Like, he is bleeding, I don't know, burgundy and gold. I forget what the official colors of Minnesota are, but like...
He rows the boat.
He rows the boat and pops out of the little gopher hole. That is Darius Taylor in a nutshell. Clearly very loyal to the program. I don't really see him transferring. And if he does transfer, I could see him going to some place that, again, is just going to feed him the rock. It's a system that we love for college fantasy. Everything else beyond this point just quickly becomes a matter of projection, but whether the system's changing or, you know, a new player in a system that we like and everything. Taylor's probably one of the few guys that has, you know, shown the last couple of years that, you know, he could be a consistent top 20 running back for you. Any other thoughts, Nate?
No, he did not make my top five.
Really? Well, you think he's gone after this year?
Yeah, same season, same reason as Sellers. Like, if you told me he would be back for another year, fine. Top three, no problem whatsoever. This is a guy that when we did this pod last year, he would have been probably number one. I mean, right there with
Mm-hmm.
maybe Ash and Jeanty, just at the hopes that maybe Jeanty would come back, kind of like you have Taylor and but I kind of equate it to that. Like, I think I think he's probably gone after this year because you know what? You know what's not great next year? That's the running back class.
Oh,
It's
yeah.
bad. And so I think there's a legit chance he's viewed as a top two or three running back in next year's class. If it were like this year's class, potentially like the class they had a couple years ago, like then yeah, sure, I could see him sticking around. But that's the only reason I didn't have him as my number top five guy.
No, and I totally understand that. What about you, Nate? Who do you have at number two?
Baylor running back Bryson Washington.
He was one of the guys where I'm like, I'm not, I still don't have a full grasp on that situation. So I'd love to hear your
Yeah.
thoughts.
Yeah, I like the sustainability that we have right here. So we've got Spavital coming back, which I don't know that there's ever been an OC since I've been doing CFF that I have done an about face as hard as I have on Jake Spavital. I've sent apology letters to the Spavital family. After all the years of me bashing him on all of my articles, I now sing his praises from the mountaintops. So I love the fact that the OC's back. I love that they've got Sawyer Robinson back as quarterback. So I just think that this offense is going to look really good next year. They're going to score a lot of points. And he was a guy that around the goal line, they just fed him. And he's another one, like you mentioned, Isaac Brown was really good after week seven or whatever last year. Well, I imagine if you ran those same numbers for Bryson Washington, he would
I
be
can tell
right
you
there, if not
ex
higher.
I can tell you exactly what he was. He was RB9 after week 7.
Yeah. So, he was a redshirt freshman last year. So he, again, a little bit different from a true freshman in that he could go pro or whatever. I don't see that happening. I think he sticks around at least for a couple more years. And I think this year is going to be really good. And there's strong potential for him moving forward.
So I have him as my RB5 in Dynasty. And in
Okay.
redraft, I have him as my, let's see, I gotta switch over to running backs here. I have him as my RB7 in redraft. And I probably would have him higher because, like you said, like he was a top 10 RB in the second half of last season. If I could trust that he continues that trajectory, yeah, you're looking at one of the best values here. And I would understand people taking him in the first round of drafts. My problem is three names here: Richard Reese, Dawson Pendergrass, now Bryson Washington.
No, we're not gonna do Richard Reese. Okay, so just I'm gonna pretend you didn't say that.
What I am, what
Dawson Pendergrass is fine, but he's not gonna vulture
No,
Washington.
no, 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 no. I am not saying that those guys are gonna like overtake Bryson
Oh, okay.
Washington. What I am saying is that it feels like 3 years in a row with Baylor, we've had a really young running back have a
Oh,
really
okay.
strong finish to a season. We
That's fair.
draft him the next year, thinking like, okay, here we go. Like he's gonna just continue where he left off, and then they fall back, right? Richard Reese was kind of understandable. Dude was like 5'8", 180 pounds. He was not really built to carry a workload like he was getting his true freshman year, right? Pendergrass, like you kind of mentioned, he's fine. 5.5 yards per carry this past year. Like he's a fine running back versus Washington was really kind of breaking out there towards the end. I'm not saying who's gonna overtake Washington, but like there's like that nagging thought in the back of my head of just like once is fine. Twice, I'm getting concerned. Three times in a row, I'm getting concerned about a pattern here.
Yeah, that's fair. The two things that I do like about Washington, one, Jaden Ott was really good under Spavital the year before at Cal. Like
Oh
that
yeah.
gives me some that gives me some hope there. And two, I found it fascinating that I think it was week three. It was either week three or four. Like Bryson Washington was hurt to start the season,
Yeah.
and when he was healthy, they didn't just like work him in. They inserted him as the starter and gave him like, I think like 16 to 20 carries or whatever in his first game. I was like, whoa, that's pretty wild to like take this redshirt freshman and doesn't play the first couple of weeks. And then as soon as he gets healthy, they're like, okay, you're our workhorse. Welcome. Let's go. So that said a lot to me that they have a lot of faith in him.
All right, I guess we'll go with my RB3 here. Yes, because yeah, Washington was your RB2. You're talking about Spavital being a coach you've done a full 180 on. I'm going to go with the player that I've done a full 180 on, because when this guy first broke onto the scene his freshman year, I went on to CTN the very next day after his week one performance against TCU, and I said, do not pick this guy up off the waiver wire if you're in redraft, because I don't like his situation at all. Well, here we are 2 years later, and his situation is going to complete 180 here, and that is Mr. Dylan Edwards, running back out of Kansas State, a guy going in the first round of drafts right now.
Is he really?
Yep.
Oh my.
I have him as my RB12 in drafts, because again, mostly due to the fact that, you know, this is a change of the guard situation, but in Dynasty, I'm willing to take on the chance. He's got 2 years of eligibility here between this year and next year in a beautiful system for college fantasy. Again, Matt Wells' systems with RBs, I remember, if I'm correct, aren't as great, so maybe that kind of bumps him down slightly, but the dude's an explosive play waiting to happen. He's got incredible speed. He's playing in the Big 12. They're not going to have defenses that are going to be able to bottle him up every single week. Matt Wells seems like a smart guy. If he quickly realizes that if he can establish a dominant ground game between Avery Johnson and Dylan Edwards, I feel like he's going to do it. So I got Dylan Edwards here. Again, his receiving work obviously gives him a huge bump here as well. This is a guy that could easily go for 900 yards on the ground, but 500 yards through the air. So I got Edwards here. And again, he's small, so I don't think he's going to really go to the NFL either.
Yeah, I like it. He was, just like I had mentioned, with QBs, Byron Brown, like I wasn't really sure where to rank him. That's kind of what happened with me with Dylan Edwards. Like, I drafted a lot of Dylan Edwards as one of my flyers in best balls last year, hoping that I would get a couple of breakout games like we saw in the bowl game. So if the bowl game is any indicator of what we're going to get as far as workload for him now that Giddens has moved on, then yeah, like this seems real fun. Like, I'm trying to figure out if that bowl game was a mirage or not. But I mean, hey, you know, I've got Damon Williams, who I saw two games from, right up here as my QB1. You know, I got guys, you know, I got other guys like Michael Alejado, you know, like these are guys we didn't see much from, and I got faith in them. So no reason to think that after 2 years that I shouldn't have faith in Dylan Edwards.
It's not like Dylan Edwards, right, where he is like a Ricky White situation where he was just gone the whole year and then broke out in one game. Like, he was involved throughout the entire year, even behind Giddens, right? 74 carries, 546 yards, 5 touchdowns. Like, it's pretty clear he's the next guy up here, right? My only concern is, like, I mentioned he's tiny. I didn't realize he's this tiny. He's 5'9", 167. Like, good Lord, dude. Eat a hamburger. Christ almighty. But yeah, no, I like where Edwards is going here. Again, I get why people are getting involved here pretty early on.
I think the bowl game was just like a no duh moment for this staff, for them to be like, hey, we've got a quarterback that's really good at running the ball, who really struggles with downfield passing. Oh, and also we've got a running back who's really good at catching the ball in the backfield.
Yep.
Those two could pair together. Oh, they're best friends. Oh, they've been doing this on like 7-on-7 circuits their whole life. Yeah, that could work. Let's try that. Oh, turns out in the bowl game, it works really well. So, I don't hate it at all. He was, like I said, he was like, Colton Joseph was just on the fringe for you for QBs. Dylan Edwards was that for my running backs.
All right. Who do you got as RB3 then?
RB3, I've got West Virginia, Jaheim White.
I was wondering if we'd be on the same page about this. I got him as my RB4.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, this is like a weird situation where, like, I already liked the running back himself, like the little bits that I've seen from him through 2 years. There's not a lot of NFL buzz, so I feel like we're likely to get 2 years out of him moving forward. And Rich Rod comes in to Morgantown, which... Yep. I'll just put it this way. There's not a whole lot better for running backs than Rich Rod. This is a guy that it doesn't matter shape, size, whatever, with the running back, whoever he finds to be his best running back, he will feed him. You know, we saw that last year with Stewart over at Jack State. We saw it countless times, with Kadeem Carey over at Arizona. We saw it. I can't remember the guy's name at Michigan that he fed a bunch, and then obviously had a lot of success at his time at West Virginia the first time around. So yeah, big fan of Jaheim White, the player. A big fan of the system now.
Yeah, I there's not very much for me to disagree on here.
And
Obviously,
CJ Donaldson moves on.
yeah, CJ
We just
Donaldson moves
keep.
on, which clears things up. Obviously, they're bringing up two backs here from the FCS and Division II levels, right? Oh my God, what's the UTS or Edwards,
Yeah, Ty Edwards.
Ty Edwards. That's I was thinking Trey
Who
Edwards
was
for
the
some
other guy?
reason.
They brought in one other guy. I can't
LJ
remember.
Turner. He was he's a running back
Okay.
from Catawba University. I'm
Cool.
gonna let you guess where that is on a map.
Catawba.
Catawba. No, but he's pretty good. I actually do like LJ Turner, like in Dynasty, like just grabbing him and storing him. He'll go super cheap in drafts.
Okay.
But
This is the guy you and Mox maybe talk.
yes.
You touched on this room a little
Yeah,
bit, I want to say, yeah.
we touched on the room here. And I like both those guys. Again, the problem is Jaheim White is still sitting here. And Jaheim White, I think, is clearly going to be the guy that, Rich Rod goes with here. There's a reason why Jaheim White's going pretty high in drafts. I have him currently as my RB13 in redraft. I have him as my RB4 in Dynasty here. The only major concern really is lack of workload shown so far, right? Again, we've seen less than 150 carries for Jaheim White in both of his two seasons so far. Obviously, that was a staff that was willing to split things up just a little bit more there. But even
Yeah.
so.
I think the big telling sign too is that he stayed. Like West
Yes.
Virginia either one paid him or two convinced him, hey, we are going to feature you. This is a Rich Rod system. Did you see what Trey Stewart did last year?
Oh, yeah.
That could be you, my friend. And so I talked with Andrew Katz about it all offseason. I was like, man, if Jaheim White stays, like this could be crazy. I'm just the perfect scenario. So the fact that he at least, I mean, he could always leave in the spring window, but him still being there is really cool.
I would definitely agree. Let's see. You already touched on my
Four.
RB4 and 5 with White and Washington there. Who are your
Oh.
4 and 5s?
Yeah, so I have number four is Caden Durham. I was a little hesitant on this just because he was kind of hot and cold a little bit last year. And God, that LSU run game has been atrocious the last couple of seasons. So that concerned me a little bit, but I think the talent is there. I feel like they've finally found their guy. And I think if he's the one that can kind of break through in that LSU run game, I think that offense is going to be really good this year. You got Nuss in year two, so I kind of like that situation. Hate it. Was he at least kind of on the fringe for you, or what?
So it's interesting, right? Because like in a year with very little to go on with running backs, with so much up in the air, there are going to be things that attract different people, right? And if you're somebody who just wants to go based off of talent, then yeah, I totally understand going for Caden Durham, right? You're talking about a guy that exploded onto the scene, clearly the best running back that LSU's had in a good while here. When I look at his stats, like you said, very hot and cold, finishes RB64 on the year. And unfortunately, unlike, guys like, Isaac Brown or Bryson Washington, where it's such a clear, slow start, awesome second half, like Durham didn't really have that. He kind of in the middle of the season got as high as RB, let's see, RB 39 in total points, RB 6 or 32 in fantasy points per game, but then it kind of fell off as the season kind of ended. And I don't really blame Durham for that. I don't think it's like people found him out. I just don't think that, like you said, that LSU run game just ever got going.
Yeah.
So if you want to bet on talent, I totally understand. He didn't make my top five, mostly due to the fact that, again, just a little inconsistent. And I think he's going way too high in like redraft leagues right now, because he's going into like the third, fourth round right now in redraft leagues. And I'm like, okay, you're betting on a lot of talent there, but system
Yeah.
hasn't been great for it last couple years.
I think it's a situation where if that offensive line clicks, like the talent's there, can it work? Then his ceiling's pretty high, like because he's a really, really talented running back. Super, super impressed whenever I watch him play.
Oh
And he's
yeah.
really good catching the ball out of the backfield too.
I think that'll be a saving grace of him as well, because a lot of people seem to just assume that LSU is going to basically go back to 2019 form, where they're going to throw 40, 45 times plus a game with Nussmeier, and that doesn't leave a ton of room for a guy like Cam Durham. Now, granted, Durham's explosive. He doesn't need, like, you know, 25 touches to have himself a great game.
Yeah.
But, you know, even if they're throwing 40, 45 times a game, I could totally see Durham getting, you know, three or four catches out of that every single game pretty easily.
My number five guy here is one that, if I probably had to do the list again, maybe I put Dylan Edwards on there. And honestly, with the case you made for Darius Taylor, I probably put Darius Taylor on there, because he falls in the same situation as Darius Taylor. I think he's maybe even in the same class, and that's Mekhi Hughes, Oregon running back. He does have 2 years of eligibility remaining. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I put him on and not Darius Taylor, like, I could see them putting up similar numbers this year. The only reason why I put him on is because Oregon has the money to actually convince him to stay if they wanted to. But if he has a big year, Jordan James left, right? I mean, Oregon could have paid him. So why would we pay to keep somebody when we could just pay for somebody less out of the portal? This is a guy that has ran for well over 2,000 yards his first 2 years. And even though he's moving up, he is moving up to a program that has been really, really consistent with the offensive line.
Yeah. Another guy that's going pretty early in drafts right now, I have him as RB9, but I've seen him go as high as the 101 already in drafts.
Oh, really?
because people are just convinced again. G5, like, top 12 running back going to a school that has pretty consistently given us top 20 running backs each of the last 2 years between Bucky Irving and Jordan James. I can't do it.
Take a player moving up from the G5 to the P4 as your 101.
I'm only reporting what I've seen. I can't say that I agree with it, but it is there.
In redrafts, I'm taking Darius Taylor over him every single day.
Yeah. I would certainly agree. I think I have Darius Taylor as my RB2. I have Mekhi Hughes as my RB9. So that gives you an idea of where I view those two.
What do you have as your RB1 in redraft?
Desmond Reed.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Desmond Reed. Again, I love Reed, and, like, he didn't even get to play his full 12 games last year and everything. Like, he could be an absolute monster this upcoming year.
Okay.
So the last guy that I had on the bubble, and I kept him out because, again, we're talking about, like, well, I was about to say I haven't seen much from him, but I did see something from him last year, right? Because he was the clear RB2 for USC, but I was thinking about putting in Quinton Joyner, the former USC running back, now headed over to Texas Tech. I'm expecting him to take over that RB1 job. I know there's some Jacoby Williams fans out there, but given what we've seen with Joey McGuire last couple of years, they bring in Matt Leftwich from Texas State, who gave us, you know, Ishmael Mahdi last year, would have given him to us again this year if Mahdi was able to stay healthy. So I fully expect them to do what they've been doing the last couple of years. Joyner looked really solid last year, averaging over 7.5 yards per carry for the Trojans. I think that he'll be dominant at Texas Tech for the next 2 years and probably go to the draft after that point. But if he doesn't, you could probably be looking at 3 years of production here.
I don't hate it. I think my biggest concerns are, if he's so good, why the hell didn't Lincoln Riley ever play him?
I don't know, man. But again, 7.5 yards per carry says a lot.
He was on my list, the same list that I talked about with Isaac Brown and Caden Durham, where I'm like, well, if the coach ever decides to let this guy loose, I don't think he would ever turn back to the guy that's currently playing ahead of him. Unlike Isaac Brown and Caden Durham, Lincoln Riley never let him loose, which I just, that was fascinating. I get he had an experienced player ahead of him, Woody Marks.
And hence why Joyner's in the portal, right? That would have been Joyner's job at USC next year.
Uh-huh.
Clearly, there's some kind of rift there between Joyner and Lincoln Riley, right? Because, like, it was wide open for him to take.
Yeah. Yeah. I think also a little bit of concern for me with Mac Leftwich. The last couple of years has kind of done a little bit of a committee kind of thing going on. And I don't think the other two backs in that backfield are bad by any sense. Like, I think they're good players that could chip away. But like you said, I don't know that he is the type of player that could that requires a ton of volume in order to be good. So yeah, I again, I don't hate it. We should probably recap our top five.
Yeah, I'll recap real quick. So my quarterbacks, Damon Williams, Jon Mateer, Lenore Sellers, Devin Dampier, and Avery Johnson. Your quarterbacks, Nate?
Damon Williams, Colton Joseph, Avery Johnson, Jon Mateer, and Michael Ali Michael
Alejado.
Aliotto.
All right, running backs. I got Isaac Brown, Darius Taylor, Dylan Edwards, Jaheim White, and Bryson Washington.
Isaac Brown for me, Bryson Washington, Jaheim White, Caden Durham, and Mekhi Hughes.
All right. Now we'll finish up with some wide receivers here, Nate. And I think, again, our number one guy, similar to running backs, you want to say it at the same time here? Ready? One, two, three, Jeremiah
Ryan
Smith.
Williams. No, I'm just playing with you. It's Jeremiah Smith.
Okay.
Hey, but
You really should.
a month ago, I had Ryan Williams as my number one. But I think I'm not going to be stupid. Like the proof is in the pudding. Like he's, I just can't do it. Jeremiah Smith.
You can't watch what he did in the playoffs
Yes,
and
again.
just not put the best wide receiver potentially in the last 10 years as the number one guy in a system that produces wide receivers for us every single year. Like, again, the only way he leaves Ohio State is if, a school comes in with a $10 million offer, and shoot, I'm not even doubting that Ohio State pays that to him right now. And even no matter where he goes, you're paying him to come there and be a 1,000-yard wide receiver for you. So I don't think there's little there's I
He's good. He's really good.
yeah I, what else is there to say? Do we just want to say our number two at the same time?
Mine's Ryan Williams.
Mine's Ryan Williams.
Yeah.
Like,
I
I
think,
think
yeah, this was the easy part of this whole exercise. It's like, okay, well, I know my top two wide receivers. Like I know. Do I get weird and try to make a case for Ryan Williams as number one? I could try. Like, so I do think that there, again, he was literally 16 whenever he showed up on Alabama's, or like when he committed to or not committed, when he signed with Alabama, he was 16 years old.
Yep.
He literally just turned 18. So I do think the ceiling is super high for him. I also think that the gap between him and whoever else is number two, I guess, for the wide receiver room there at Alabama, I guess we would, make it the Washington transfer
Jeremy Bernard.
Bernard. Yeah, like I think that gap is larger than what Smith is to Tate. I think Ryan Williams is incredible, and they are going to feed him a ton this year. It would not shock me if Ryan Williams outproduced Jeremiah Smith, but gun to my head, I still have to take Jeremiah Smith as number one wide receiver in Dynasty.
Yeah, I mean the talent's super obvious with Ryan Williams. I literally saw it in person when I watched him play Georgia. All right, like there's no denying what was going on there. And the level of concern that I have with Ryan mostly deals with, again, the second half of the season was not great for him, right? He started off really, really strong, and especially in conference play. Nate, what do you think? So he was wide receiver 12 in non-conference play, averaging 19.4 fantasy points per game. What do you think he was in conference play, fantasy points per game?
And like in the SEC alone?
No, like it, like
Oh, you mean, oh,
playing
sorry.
against other
Yeah, what
SEC
were his
teams.
conference? I mean, probably like wide receiver 80 or something like that. Like
Wide
probably.
receiver 105
Yeah.
and averaging 11.9 points per game. Now, a lot of that has to do with Milroe,
Milroe's
right? Like,
passing. Milroe's passing in conference was terrible because he got to play real defenses in conference.
completely crap the bed.
Right.
We're hoping Ty Simpson's an improvement on that, right? Like, now what we
That's
see
assuming
from,
Ty Simpson's the starting quarterback.
well, whoever starts, right? We're assuming there's going to be an improvement in the passing game, right? That was a clear issue with Milroe, right? And I think that's something that the staff's going to emphasize this year, considering that it actively killed them in three different games when they played. So I think Ryan Williams will have somebody better next year. I 100% believe he's going to finish well above wide receiver 32, which is where he finished last year in total points. Yeah, I got no problem with him being number two, obviously. I think now is where things kind of get a little bit more interesting potentially here. So, Nate, I'll let you say your wide receiver three in Dynasty going into 2025.
So this is so Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams kind of break the mold where they're clear. Normally with wide receiver, unlike quarterback and running back, I'm not as interested in the amount of eligibility you have left.
Interesting.
That's so like you like I will look at wide receiver not as much as tight end. Like tight end is strictly just a redraft
Yeah. You can
position
find
for
new guys
me.
every year.
Wide receivers somewhere between running back and tight end when it comes to how concerned I am with eligibility. For number three for me is Jordan Tyson at Arizona
Okay.
State, who could and will leave after this season, I think. There's always a chance, Miami, Oregon, Ohio
If
State, whoever.
he comes back, it's because something went horribly wrong.
Probably because there was debate on if he was going to come back this year or not. And he announced he was coming back. So, but Jordan Tyson is my number three. The dude was absolutely insane in the month of November. Like,
Oh God, it's
I mean, it was crazy. Like he, I don't even know how many targets it was, but I think it was something like 65 targets in the month of November alone. Like it was insane.
So week 10 on, he was the wide receiver one.
So I have a lot of faith in Jordan Tyson. Again, very, it's a situation like where the OC or the coaching staff remains intact. His quarterback is still there. Like a lot of strong pieces there. So this is kind of my Darius Taylor example that you kind of use for the running backs.
Yeah, I definitely kind of pushed the multiple years of eligibility a little bit with wide receivers here. I can definitely see myself putting Tyson in my top five because, again, with there just being so little known about wide receivers this year, a guy like Tyson's definitely going to pop up. My number three, in terms of guys that could potentially come back, and I think it's a better chance of him coming back this year or next year than Tyson, I'm going with your boy, Denzel Boston. Over at Washington, right? Again, another guy where I think he's in for a really good year this year. I think I have him as my wide receiver. Where are you? Wide receiver seven for redraft this year, right? Again, he kind of fell off a little bit towards the end, but I think that was because, Will Rogers was still the quarterback for whatever reason by like week 10, and they could have been using Damon Williams that whole time. But regardless, it was pretty clear the role he was getting in that Jed Fish system is the same role that Tet McMillan was getting with them, right? It's a pretty consistent system that we could rely on. I think he'll get 2 years. This was a year that he could have transferred this year, in my opinion. Like, he had a good enough year that there was enough programs looking for an X receiver that he could have moved on from Washington. That tells me he's pretty loyal to that program and that system. So I think there's a good chance we see him finish his career at Washington either this year or next year. And you just sit back and enjoy it. What about you, Nate? You got your boy in the top five?
He's my number six. He's my fringe guy.
Gotcha.
Debated on him. He should absolutely be owned over my number five guy, which we'll talk about here in a minute. Because my number five is just a little weird. But yes, love Denzel Boston. Obviously, we have a ton of confidence in Damon Williams as our number one quarterback. So yeah, that pairing, Jed Fish, yeah, it's all there. It's good solid mix. Yep, love it.
All right, who's your number three guy then, Nate?
Jordan Tyson.
Oh, wait, you already said number three. I guess we'll go with my number four then. So this is one of the rules where I'm breaking it. And I kind of teased this earlier, where I mostly stuck to Power Four schools. This is probably my one G5 guy that I have in my list, and that is Pafele Ashlock. We still haven't really seen that clear, crystal, like, top-end year from him, right? But what we have seen is an average of 120 targets over the last 2 years, if you extrapolate his 11 games to 12 games this past year, right?
How
Like,
many have last year?
he had 90 something, but again, if you extrapolate it to 12, that puts him at like 109, I think it was. And then he had like 130 something the year before. So it was like averages out like 120. Do like the volume supreme here, right? And this is me being slightly hypocritical with my, like, worries about Michael Alejandro earlier. Like, if Michael Alejandro is the top five dynasty asset, then Ashlock definitely is as well. Because you're assuming that means we get the full Timmy Chang offense this year, right? And if that's the case, Ashlock's going to go absolutely on fire with the volume that he's getting with a real quarterback behind him. He's not going anywhere. Again, this is another guy that it seems like that he could have had his opportunity to transfer twice now, and he still has it because he could have transferred after last year, in my opinion. Now he could have transferred this year. Still hasn't. I think he's a Rainbow Warrior for life here. He'll finish his career on the island. So I'm sticking with him as a top four in my dynasty.
Yeah, I can't get there anymore with him. Like, you know how many 100-yard receiving games he had after the month of August?
Not many.
None. None.
But again, none. But
do you know how many games he had with 30 yards or less in his last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
I'm going to guess 5 games. I'm going to guess 3.
4. He had 4 games of 30 yards or less in his last 5.
Yes, but what happens when he gets a real quarterback throwing to him? Because he's getting the volume.
That game against New Mexico when Alejandro was the starting quarterback, he had 10 targets, 8 catches, 79 yards, and a touchdown, which is pretty much all you can ask for, right? Like, that's, you know, that's 20 points, 20 plus points. Like, that's what you want, right? It's crazy. Like, the game before that, 12 yards, 17 yards, 30 yards, 21 yards, 42 yards. Like, I don't know. It's hard to get there with how bad he was last year, even though the volume, target volume was there. So that's the reason why he didn't crack my top five.
All right, who did crack your top five at number four then?
At number four, I have Cam Coleman of Auburn, and it kills me to put a Auburn Gus Malzahn wide receiver on here, but I'm gonna do that every time. Hugh Freeze, wide receiver with Cam Coleman, but. I think he's one of these guys like Jeremiah Smith, like Ryan Williams. I think he's not very far behind them when it comes to overall talent. And yes, I know he's more of kind of a deep threat, go up and get it jump ball kind of guy. But that's fine. Like, that seems to work in that system. And I think Jackson Arnold is a good enough quarterback to support that. In fact, Jackson Arnold's probably the type of quarterback where he could just zero in on Cam Coleman and not worry about having to make a ton of reads.
Yep.
which is what Hugh Freeze likes in his quarterback. So I feel good about having 2 years of Cam Coleman over just about anybody else out there that we haven't discussed.
So I just looked up something that probably would have pushed Cam Coleman into my top five. And I'll go ahead and say, like, because my number five spot was really tied between three guys. I'll just say that Cam Coleman's, like, officially in my number five guy then. Coleman was wide receiver 25 in the second half of the season. Right. Yeah, I didn't realize
that was buoyed by, well, didn't he have like a 4-touchdown game or something like that?
Yeah, but even still, right? Like, his role in the offense became crystal clear, right? Like, Hugh Freeze is going to break his mold. He knows he has a super awesome talent in Cam Coleman there. Yeah, I know they bring in Eric Singleton. Yeah, I know Malcolm Simmons is a thing, but like, Coleman's above both of those guys. And as much as I like Simmons, right? Like, they bring in Jackson Arnold. Jackson Arnold, I know this might be hard for you to hear, Nate, as soon as, oh, never mind, you're good, you got Mateer. But like, I think Arnold still has it in him, right? I think he's definitely going to be an improvement over Peyton Thorne, and Peyton Thorne was more than good enough to feed Cam Coleman towards the end of the year.
Yeah,
they don't bring back Cam Coleman unless they have a promise of him being a wide receiver one this year, because I think he would have been, like, you're talking about, if so, like, Eric Singleton, I know for a fact, commanded like $2 to $4 million in the transfer portal, which to me is absolutely nuts. Cam Coleman was a guy that some programs were lining up, you know, $5, $6, $7 million for. And so, like, he could have gone anywhere. He chose to stay at Auburn. They're going to make him a feature piece of this offense this next year, and I think they'll make him a feature piece for the next 2 years. So
Auburn's not short of funds.
No, they are not.
They're short in a lot of places, but, man, the lumber mill guy, he's got a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I have no problem putting Cam Coleman in your top five. I am officially making him my wide receiver 5 now. which means my
That's not
top five.
fine. Who was going to be your fifth guy?
So my again, it's kind of tied between three guys here, but I was looking at Emmett Moseley and Ryan Wingo were my other two guys. Just two
Okay.
other talents that I like. Wasn't really sure how much I loved the system.
Yeah. I don't hate it. I just, again, it makes probably more sense than who I'm about to tell you, but Emmett Moseley, I guess, would probably I would take him over Ryan Wingo, even though man, Stanford scares the
That's
bejesus out of me
the
this
main
year.
thing because
Like,
like I like Mosley the talent. I
they have
hate
the
Stanford
worst
the sim.
schedule. They have
Oh.
the worst schedule, and they who's well, I guess they have the freshman's going to be their starting quarterback
Yeah.
this year. The guy had his hand banged up last year.
Yeah, Elijah Brown. Yeah. I look
Yeah,
forward to
yeah.
that potentially, hopefully. I
Yeah,
don't
I
know.
think yeah, he's a better passer than what they've had the last couple of years. I mean, Daniels was terrible, and I mean, just he's got to be better than what they've had.
Oh,
So,
I was about to say the schedule's not too bad, and then I see Notre Dame Championship Week. That's a little rough.
yeah, they got three byes. One of them is in the playoffs, and then you've got Notre Dame and somebody else in their playoff week. So
Yeah, so note to everybody out there drafting Emmett Moseley in the top three rounds of drafts right now. You're not going to count on him during your championship run.
So my number five,
Yes.
again, like I said, this is a guy that's going to break the mold of what we've talked about as far as you have to show me something. I get it's a dynasty draft, but you got to show me something. We did not talk about Underwood at quarterback, who has shown us nothing but is a freakazoid type QB. I have a freaky wide receiver here, and that's Oregon's DeCorian Moore.
Okay.
I think he's kind of in that Jeremiah Smith, Ryan Williams mold where a year from now we're like, oh, we probably should have drafted him higher in our dynasty drafts, even if it's not a supplemental freshman draft. Like, we probably should have taken him higher in just startup leagues. I could see him definitely filling the so this is a five-star wide receiver out of Texas going to Oregon.
Yes.
I could see him filling the Tez Johnson spot quite nicely. And I think they still have, who is it? Gary, don't they have a wide receiver that the USC transfer?
Oh, Gary Bryant.
Gary Bryant. Like, he's still there. I think he's got one more year. May I think he's gonna have to battle Gary Bryant for the slot position. There's worse players that you could go against at a place like Oregon than Gary Bryant that you're trying to take the job from. And if he gets that job, like being, the Will Stein slot receiver that we've seen, from his time at UTSA and now at
Oh, yeah.
Oregon with Tez Johnson, like I think things are lining up for him to have one of those Jeremiah Smith, Ryan Williams type freshman seasons where 650, 700 yards and a handful of touchdowns is within his range of outcomes. And next year we're looking at him saying, well, this is, on three, we're gonna say it together, DeCorey Moore. Like that,
Yeah.
that's gonna be our the potential for him at wide receiver next year in Dynasty.
I don't hate it. Again, like I said, like I do think to make top five, you need to show me something at this
Yeah,
point.
right.
But in a year where, again, there's so much variability at wide receiver, and wide receiver is already a very variable role just to begin with, right? I don't mind the idea of just taking a shot on a guy that could be, like you said, the receiver room's wide open because he has Evan Stewart, who he's not going to compete for in the slot, obviously. And then they bring in Malik Benson, which I don't know how he still convinces anybody he's worth anything right now. I'm going to eat my
Isn't that
words when he goes
wild?
for 900 yards this year. And then, like, they got what? Justice Flo still hanging around. Like, or, oh my God, who's the 5-star wide receiver from like 2 years ago that we all liked and that he did absolutely nothing?
Oh my gosh. Yes, he wore like number 91 or something like that.
Yeah. I can't remember his name. It was a 5-star. Like, everybody
Yeah.
loved him. And now, like, oh my God, I can't even remember his name. This is horrific. Yeah, I can't. I'm going to lose my mind if I don't look this up. But anyway, like, the point being that there's not a ton of competition there, right? Like,
Right.
there's a path for him, which, again, is what we thought about this guy a couple years ago. But I don't blame you. Again, going off of talent, it's not quite my preferred area, but it's maybe the way we have to go forward with, you know, Dynasty and everything going forward with just how many things change year to year. We're both looking this up right now, aren't we? Like, why can't I remember this guy's name? Dude, there's like three people listening to this podcast just screaming.
Jurian Dickey.
Jurian Dickey, that's his freaking name. Oh my God, I could not.
I looked up Oregon five-star wide receiver recruit, and all I got was DeCorian Moore. And finally, I was like, okay, how about I enter the year 2023 in there? So.
There we go. Oh my God. That was, I was like losing my mind. I'm like, trying to keep the podcast going. I'm like spilling words out of my mouth just to make sure there's no dead air, but like, thank you. Appreciate you that. Yeah. So that's our top five. Did you have any more, anybody else that you were kind of considering on the bubble there?
Just Boston. Boston was my wide receiver six. So
gotcha. The only downside again, you just think he's gone after this year.
Yeah, I think that is likely. Again, gun to my head, put me in a redraft. I'm probably taking Denzel Boston in a dynasty. In a dynasty startup, I'm probably taking him over Coleman, DeCorian Moore. Mm-hmm. But you know, I don't know. Maybe I'd get weird and I would take DeCorian Moore. I don't know. But it's I love Denzel Boston. So yeah, don't hate it at all.
All right, Nate, we got a few minutes here. You want to try to hash out a trade talk real quick live on air here?
I don't know, man. I feel like we were pretty far off from what was discussed.
I was
earlier,
just feeling things out, man. Like I just wanted to see. So for those of you who want to listen to this portion, basically Nate offered me or let me know about some players he was kind of interested in on my roster. He wanted to make a trade. He's got the bug. He wants to make something happen here, and he knows for a fact that I am contractually obligated to make one terrible trade with him every year in this dynasty league. So hey, he's trying to get it out of the way early this year.
This time last year when we made a trade, everybody on Twitter, you posted on Twitter and you had people vote, and they're like, well, clearly Jared fleeced Nate on this deal. So but it did happen to involve Brown from Caleb Johnson from Iowa. So I was like, I don't know. It actually turned out pretty good for Nate.
That turned out pretty dang. That was a 2 years ago one, and then last year was the
Last year.
Was that really last year?
Yeah.
No way. I could because
it was also like Isaiah Bond.
Ah, shoot. I really screwed that one up, and I screw it up again now. Because, again, you also got me on the Zach Evans, Ricky White one, which, like, Jesus Christ, what the hell was I thinking?
Oh, that was draft time. Yeah.
And to all the people in the league complaining about, like, oh, you just handed Nate Ricky White, I'm like, well, y'all send me better offers next time. But anyway, Nate, you're on my roster. You give me four names, and the one that I'm kind of willing to deal here is Michael Hawkins, right? And I understand why you're taking a look at him. If I'm not correct, you don't have John Battier in this league, right?
You better believe I do.
You do have John Battier in this league. I can't keep track of who has what in what league. So you want to lock up that Oklahoma room. If John Battier goes down, Michael Hawkins steps into the Ben Arbuckle system. Hawkins,
it's a homer play. This is a pure homer play. I don't think either one of these guys are any good. Mateer sucks. Hawkins sucks. You know, you should probably
So I see through your game there, Nate. So I am going to make the price here a little bit. Now, I asked for Eric McAllister off of your roster, right? Because I need some players. I got Josh Hoover. So I want that stack.
I didn't realize.
So,
you had
like,
Josh Hoover.
I'm willing to kind of make something happen there for you to lock up.
Where's McAllister going in some of these early drafts you've been doing?
So I took him in the third round. In the way too early, I think he went off in the fourth round. Okay. If I remember correctly. So not quite, you know, top end guy, but you know, mm-hmm. I see the 243 vacated targets at TCU and a offense that's going to throw 40 times a game. McAllister already last year with his limited play was an impact player whenever he was out there on the field. So I think he's in for a monster year. I probably shouldn't tell you this, but again, like, I have him as a top six wide receiver for CFF this year. I think he's going to.
I've seen your wide receiver ranks.
Oh, that's right. You have.
I know where you got Eric McAllister. That's what I was like, huh. Boy, that sure seems like a lot for the backup quarterback at Oklahoma.
But it's Dynasty, Nate. You're locking up the Ben Arbuckle quarterback room for foreseeable future.
Foreseeable future, maybe like 8 months.
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, that's Dynasty now, right? You are also loaded at wide receiver, I might add.
You think so? Because I feel like I only got like four wide receivers.
Nate, it's
on
a
my
24
team
league, all right? Like, you gotta like adjust your expectations a little bit in terms of like what a loaded wide receiver room looks like. You have on your in your wide receiver room, you have Denzel Boston, Deion Burks, Eric McAllister. Like, that's a loaded wide receiver room any given year.
Yeah, it's just not very many. It's just not very many players, I guess, is what I was thinking.
Yeah, but compared to literally everybody else in this league, Nate, like anybody would kill for that wide receiver room. Because like my wide receiver room, taking a look at it real quick, like my best options here are, let's see, I got Aaron Anderson, Carlos Hernandez might be something at Wake Forest this year. I don't really
That's
know. Or Lewis
it.
Brown going back to Colorado State, like.
Oh, okay.
You see why I'm kind of aiming for wide receiver here?
Know.
So,
I don't know, man.
what would it take, Nate? Like, what would I have to add on top of Michael Hawkins to get McAllister?
Let me look at your let me pull up your roster one time. This is probably not making the best. There you are, Jared's execution. Okay, let's see what else you got. Let's see what else
I
you
can
got in the
also play
bag
the
here.
card that I've given you enough lopsided trades that you kind of owe me one in this league. So, like.
Oh, Cantrell Bullock's still there. What is he doing these days? Did he ever return? They put the black flag next to him on Fantrax. Is that doesn't mean good the stuff, right? Like, that means
Where
is he
is Cantrell
dead?
Bullock? Do I not see him on my roster?
He's
Oh,
in the well,
there. He's got
unless
a.
you
We
cut
got
him.
a. On. Oh, I have him
What's the
on the
black
trade.
flag mean?
I have him on the trade block.
The black flag means he's on the trade block?
That's at least what I'm seeing on my screen. Like
Oh.
when I hover over, it says on this team's trade block. So I need to
Oh,
update that
okay.
trade block.
I thought maybe that meant like things weren't going well for him personally. Like, got a black flag
So
on him here.
Michael Hudson's got next to him. He's just got a black flag and just like.
I don't know, man. Well, I'm definitely not getting Antoine Raymond. I know you're a big fan of him.
Nope, yep.
You got some good young running backs here,
Dude, my
though.
running back room is like where I'm liking things, right?
Braylon Russell, Yason Willis, Miles
Jordan
Montgomery,
Marshall in a couple years.
Carson Hanson. Like, yeah, it's a good Ala. Oh, maybe we have something there. Like, because I currently own Oregon State's starting running back,
Okay.
and Ala is there for you for the Oregon State backup running back. So yeah, I mean, this is one of those deals where, handcuffs and situations may play itself out. I don't know. I'm not willing to make any deals on live on the air here, but
I will
I'll
let you
chew
know
on
right
something.
now, like if I give you Hawkins and Ala, I'm gonna want something back in addition to McAllister.
Well, then we're just too far
No,
apart.
I'm not looking for anything crazy here, right? But I need like again, I like having kind of equal assets coming back and forth, right? I'm not gonna give you two players for one player back and everything like that. Like we'll figure out like a draft pick or something like that that we can work out that I
Okay.
think would be
We
good.
might we've got bones to something here. We'll see if we can put some meat on those bones.
All right. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed that little trade talk. I actually found that very entertaining. I think that we just need to do that one episode. Just invite people on and be like, "All right, let's make a deal."
Give me your roster. Here's my roster. Okay, let's find something here.
So, all righty. That
All
being
right, dude.
said, this has been awesome, Nate. Glad to have you back and everything. Glad that we can talk some Dynasty. Hopefully, I can get you on the actual CTN here pretty soon. I know you're doing your stock up and stock down ratings right now. Are you doing your coaching change articles again this year?
No.
No, no
No,
coaching change articles.
I didn't do
Well,
those last year. Those are, oh man, those took like 3 years off my life, the one off
there's
season
just
when I
so
did
many changes each year,
that.
dude.
I know Mike Valerie loved them and stuff like that, and they're super helpful, but my God, they're a lot of work with as many coaching changes as
Oh
there
my
are
God,
now.
I couldn't even believe. Yeah, how about I just invite you onto the CTN show and I take 1 year off
Yeah.
your life this year? How about that?
Let's do it.
So yeah, I can get you on for the Power Four only ones. That way you don't have to go. That way you don't have to dive into the weeds of FCS offensive coordinators or anything like that. Yeah, but Nate, you got your stock up, stock down articles coming out. People love those every single year. And then yeah, otherwise just taking it easy, like just feeling things out, just seeing other people make mistakes in drafts before you kind of hop in?
Yeah, now there'll be more articles coming down the pipe. We're loading up on the stock up, stock down positional articles. QB will be out first, probably by the time you guys are listening to this. Running back, wide receiver soon to follow, and then we'll have another rendition of the nuclear option article probably coming out, and a handful of other things here over the next month or so. I plan to be pretty busy.
All righty, I always look forward to your articles, Nate. You do a fantastic job on them.
Appreciate it.
And yeah, just on my end, again, check out the Way Too Early special if you have not already. Be on the lookout for next week when I invite on Ethan Sowers. He has not seen the draft board yet, so you will hear a live reaction from him as we go through it round by round. That'll be a ton of fun. Be on the lookout for, like I said, the coaching change shows we'll have coming up soon. I will be taking a 2 week break after this week because, again, I am moving into a new house, so I need all the time in the world that I can on my hands. And then we'll be back to it with the coaching change article or coaching change shows, not articles. Nate's already warned me off of those. That being said, again, check out campusacan.com. Check out all the other shows. We do a fantastic job. If you want a yearly membership over there, use promo code Natty, 10% off of your yearly membership. That being said, Nate, appreciate you. Appreciate all of you listening out there. Hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.